Morning.
There are a couple of members of our retreat group who aren't here yet. Petra and Simon. Could you make sure that they hear the part of this talk that they missed this morning? Thank you. Whenever we have the incredible opportunity, good morning. Just be seated and forget completely about being late and what anyone thinks about it or anything else. Because I'm not thinking anything about it, so we'll leave all those points of view in basic space where they belong. So, you know, when we have the incredibly rare opportunity in life to hear a direct message of the truth, it's so important to take advantage of that opportunity and to really guard it with everything we have in the same way that we'd guard anything like our eyes or our heart, anything that's totally precious to us, or our brain. That Petra, come in and sit down. Welcome. As I just told Simon, and what is your name?
Julian.
As I just told both of them, they came in late as well. Forget about being late and forget about what I might think about it or anyone else, you know. No point of view is worth making anything out of. Good morning. Welcome. What's your name?
Gisella.
Hello, Gisella. I'm Candace.
Hi, I've met you before.
You have?
Yes.
Where did we meet?
Long, long time ago.
Oh.
In Hong Kong.
Oh, in Hong Kong. Oh, it's wonderful to see you again.
Yes, it's a pleasure to be here.
Ah.
I just noticed that you were here yesterday.
Ah.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here. Welcome. And good to see you again.
Yes, same. Thank you. Namaste.
Namaste. There are all kinds of messages that we can hear about awakening and that we can hear about the truth, but it's very rare to come into a circumstance where we're not only told about the truth and told about what's possible for us as human beings, but where everything is in place to decisively lead us to that realization in very short order. So I'm not talking about years or decades or anything like that, but a very short period of time during which key points and pivotal instructions lead one to the epitome essence of their true nature, and that it becomes fully evident at all times. So this is the kind of circumstance the Great Freedom Teaching is. It's unerring in its evidence of full pure awareness in anyone who commits to it. Anyone who commits to it, no matter where you live on the face of the earth, you're supported fully in that 24 hours a day. So it's not like the kind of thing where you come to a teaching, then you have to go home and you're all alone wherever you live. You have no way to get in touch with anyone who was in the teaching, or you might send a few emails to this one and that one, but most likely you have no contact with the teacher you just saw, or no community where you live, or anything like that. So that is not what this circumstance is like. We're a full service organization and we're available 24 hours a day. We're available by email. We're available by telephone. We respond to all our emails and telephone calls within 24 hours. And we have a complete structure worldwide for that to be the case. We not only give teachings in a face-to-face format like this, but we have a very sophisticated system of teleconferencing in which the only charge to you are your long-distance charges. There's no charge for the conference bridge itself, where you can call in and hear new teachings. So you're not alone, and you never have been. So, you know, this is the first time in human history where a message like this has been available to everyone on the face of the earth, no matter where they live or no matter who they are, where it's spoken and translated into many languages that any human being can understand. And the reason that any human being can understand it is that it's all based on direct experience. The direct and decisive experience we as human beings, who only are self-knowing awareness, the direct experience we have of who we are in our essence, in our fundamental nature. So when, you know, we have this incredible opportunity to come into a circumstance like this, it's so important to take advantage of it in every way possible. Because as I said, it is relentless and unerring. There's nothing left out here. And this is not something that's just pointed to here, but something that is absolutely available and accessible here. So we offer a 100% guarantee. Anyone who shows up and is committed will absolutely realize who they are. We can say that with complete confidence because we've seen it happen so many times. So when we come into a circumstance like this, it's so important to have the proper motivation for being here. And the proper motivation is as it has always been, and that is that we want to realize what this truly real awakening or enlightenment is. We want to realize what this complete enlightenment is for the benefit of everyone, so that everyone, no matter who they are and where they live, can have the benefit of complete enlightenment. And it's upon that proper motivation or foundation that we have our own foundation in wanting to realize our own enlightenment. Do you understand what I mean? So the desire for our own enlightenment is based on that foundation of wanting it for everyone. Now, this may sound superficial or unnecessary, or why is that important? But for most of us, we're raised considering all of our points of view. We've considered all the phenomena that appear within our awareness as reality. So we've been looking to the points of view to establish our definition of reality. And when we do so, we consider ourselves to be fragmented, isolated, and alone. We see ourselves as an individual who's split off from everyone else. And when we see ourselves as an individual who's split off from everyone else, usually over the decades, we feel that way increasingly. And so when we begin to understand that there's something more about us than this limited existence we've been looking at, then one of the ways to come into into connection with the vastness of that is to establish this proper motivation whereby we're not cut off from anyone. And this proper motivation is that in every action of our body, speech, and mind, we dedicate it and devote it to the complete enlightenment of everyone, not only our own enlightenment. And when I speak of complete enlightenment, I'm speaking of the complete enlightenment that equals complete benefit. So this isn't any kind of enlightenment that's all based on personal perceptions of awakening related to oneself. This is complete enlightenment that equals complete benefit. Now, I will illustrate that for you in a very simple way. In India, the cow is sacred. And the cow is sacred because it is all-giving. It's the only source of protein, really, in India. So the cow is all-giving. It gives ceaselessly all its life. You know, It gives milk, and out of that milk, all kinds of things are made, paneer and cheese and milk and cream and all of these different kinds of things. And so if we are looking at our awakening in that way, you know, that it's like this all-giving milk that appears and it manifests in all these forms. In other words, our own perceptions about what awakening is, this experience and that experience. Oh, I'm fully awake now. I'm totally enlightened. If we're just looking at the aspects of enlightenment in the same way that we'd be looking at all the products that can be made from milk, then we're looking at just a very, very narrow aspect of what enlightenment is, because that's only the first step of enlightenment. That's only the first step. The most important thing about all these products of the cow are that it feeds innumerable beings, you know. So in the same way, complete enlightenment equals complete benefit. If we only focus on the products of enlightenment that manifest in ourselves, these wonderful feelings of freedom we have, and this complete relief from all worry and concern, this complete relief with no fear remaining and no hope either. And, you know, when we just feel absolutely at ease in all circumstances, that's only the opening of the door. That is only the opening of the door to who we are. But sometimes we can't know that, because when we've been caught up in our points of view for many decades, that may just seem so incredible that we're sure we've found it. You know, we're absolutely sure we found what we're looking for. But when that door opens, you know, it is immense, it is amazing, it is superb, it is marvelous, it is magnificent. Yet what comes after that in each moment is always a blazing splendor. You know, it's always something that is so totally incredible. Because all we ever have been, and all we ever will be, and all we are right now, is holy, positive, basic space that is entirely aware. And that awareness is vast like infinite space. And everything that appears within it is inseparable from it, just like the color blue is inseparable from the sky, just like the green and the leaves of the tree are inseparable from the leaf. So all of the dynamic energy of awareness, all of these things we may have taken ourselves to be, we've never been. We've never been. Awareness is awareness in all its forms, and awareness can never be separated from those forms. So every point of view, no matter what it is, has perfect recall of itself as awareness. You see, this is something we can count on. No matter what point of view we have, it has perfect recall of itself as awareness. So when we take ourselves to be these points of view, then we think that's what our body, speech, and mind is. And we feel limited by our perceptions. We feel limited by our minds. We feel limited by our speech. We feel limited by what our body can do in the world. We only see very limited possibilities of what that can be. But when that door bursts open and the sun of awareness shines as the light of all points of view, then the journey really begins. Because we find that our body, speech, and mind are no longer confined to the head of a pin, as they are when we're all wrapped up in points of view. We find that just as this blazing reality of the sun of awareness shines as every single point of view, so that is our true body, speech, and mind. And we grow fully in that in a way that's deep, profound, and immensely rich in every single millisecond. So more and more we realize ourselves and familiarize ourselves with ourselves as enlightened body, speech, and mind. And then, you know, we enter a reality that is just incredibly marvelous. It's a reality that's always present, but we can never know it or tap into it until we rest naturally without seeking anything in the immediacy of every perception. So this is the only way to enter. You know, the secret key is to enlightenment is first to establish the proper motivation. There's no way to have the complete realization without the proper motivation. And then secondarily, to find your own freedom in the immediacy of every perception. Every perception, every point of view is already entirely free. It's already accomplished. Like I said, each point of view, no matter what it is, has total recall of itself as awareness. Isn't that the name of a movie, Total Recall? I don't know what it's about, but I know it's not about this. If it were, I would have seen it. So, you know, and these points of view, they're not our enemies. They're not our enemies. They are who we are. And each one has total recall about itself. So we don't have to hammer it into being, or we don't have to apply any intellectual maneuvering or figuring it out to any point of view. It already knows what it is as awareness. So when we rest naturally without seeking anything, when each point of view comes up, more and more this wonderful reality opens up to us. So these are really the only two things that are required: the proper motivation, resting naturally free in the immediacy of each perception. So here in the Great Freedom Teaching, we're, you know, directly introduced to that reality for ourselves, as all of you here already are. But you know, I have a wonderful story to share with you about the proper motivation, and this comes from one of the great traditions of pinnacle teachings of awakening. Now, when I mention this over and over again, I use the term pinnacle teachings, or the phrase the epitome teachings of awakening. What I'm talking about are teachings of direct perception of awareness. In other words, teachings of direct perception that have existed throughout the history of humankind, wherein at least hundreds of thousands of people have awakened under one teacher. You know, there was a teacher like that who lived very recently in the 20th century. So, you know, now here's another teaching like that, the Great Freedom Teaching. So, you know, this is not something that's rare or elect as it's made out to be. So when I talk about a pinnacle teaching or an epitome teaching, this is what it is. It not only says you're already awake, but it absolutely shows you that you are. And in everything that's spoken, there's no message other than that. So you're not told that you have an ego that needs to be rectified, or an I that needs to be dissolved, or that you've ever been identified or fixated on anything, or that you are now, or any of these things. It starts only with your identity. You are awareness. That's your only identity. You've never had any other identity. You're already awake. You don't have to reshape your behaviors, your thoughts, or your emotional states in order to be entirely free. Whatever your thoughts, emotional states, and conduct are, they are the essence of your freedom. As long as you're trying to rearrange them into all these different shapes that will spell out freedom, there will be no freedom. And we all know this. Now, even if we've been able to give up a few habits or whatever it is in our life, has anyone here ever been able to permanently stop the countless ceaseless points of view from happening forever? No, and no one ever has. No one ever has. So you see, these points of view are the dynamic energy of awareness. They're not anything other than awareness, so they don't need to be stopped. They don't need to be reshaped into a better skill set of points of view or anything like that. There'll be some semblance of freedom, but it's like chipping off 1/10 of a carat of a 100-carat diamond and saying, I've got it. You know, if you kind of look at all your character flaws and say, oh, I'm going to be a better person, and then try to be a better person. And maybe you are a better person in some ways, but that's just, oh, a smattering of the great reality. It's just a tiny smattering of the great reality. So, you know, here's a story I'd like to share with you about a teacher. And every day, he gave a direct perception teaching like this. And every day, the people who would come to see him, he would give them three opportunities to establish the proper motivation. First, he'd wake them all up at 3 o'clock in the morning. So that was their first opportunity to establish the proper motivation. And then he lived in a tent, a big tent, you know, where hundreds of people could come. And when people got to the tent, they had to squeeze through a very tiny opening in order to get in. So that was their second opportunity to establish the proper motivation. And then if they got inside the tent, he would just sit quietly with them, and if they didn't have the proper motivation, he'd send them away. Well, you see how easy it is here at the Great Freedom Teaching. You know, you don't have to jump through any hoops. I just already know everyone has the proper motivation, or you wouldn't be here. You know, you wouldn't have walked in the door. You never would have ended up here if you didn't have the proper motivation. You see, this proper motivation, it's not something we have to get or anything we can force ourselves into or anything anyone else can force us into. No one can force us into dedication or devotion. It's impossible. We already are dedicated and devoted. Every instant of our life is full out dedication and devotion. So, you know, maybe for a while we've been dedicated and devoted to points of view because we don't know anything else. We've never met someone who can really direct us straight away into the reality of who we are. But all those points of view, no matter what they are, have never been our substance. They've never been our substance at all. So we can come to a definitive conclusion about that by looking into these things we've taken ourselves to be and to use our body, speech, and mind in a way that gives us greater awareness about that. And you know, this is very simple. Anyone who has ever learned anything can learn this too. We, just as we've been dedicated and devoted to point of view, we can be dedicated and devoted to the enlightenment of all beings. We just shift the focus of our dedication and devotion. Our dedication and devotion is always already entirely alive, right? Can anyone deny that? No one can. So you see, all these things, these are things any human being can relate to, these things I'm talking about, awareness. No one on the face of the earth can say, I am not aware. Number two, dedication and devotion. We've all been dedicated or devoted to something. No matter who we are, we're dedicated and devoted to something. So when we begin to look into this matter, when we hear this incredible message and we feel that vibration of truth alive in us, you know, we come to a teaching like this, we sit in the chair and maybe for the first time in our lives we don't have anything going on in our awareness, you know, even if it's only for 5 minutes, but we notice there's something different. Where are all those thoughts and feelings I was having when I walked up the hill to come here? Or when I was awake at 3 a.m, or whatever it was? What happened to all those thoughts and feelings? What happened to all my worries about the future, or my regrets about the past, or whatever it is? Or, you know, my hope that I'll attain enlightenment and my fear that I won't. Where are all those things now? Where did they go? Well, you see, that's what awareness is. That's a direct introduction to your own pure awareness. So, you know, it's just that when we come into a gathering like this, we give ourselves permission to directly experience it. We've placed ourselves here so we can have the freedom to directly experience it. It's not circumstantial. Freedom is not circumstantial. The freedom that is experienced here is the freedom that is your reality everywhere. no matter where you go. And if you think you can only experience it in this circumstance, then that's just a point of view. So when that point of view comes up, be free in the immediate perception of it. Know that there's no point of view, no matter what it is, that has ever imprisoned or contained freedom, because all points of view are freedom. So you see, there's no way out of freedom, no matter where you turn. You can turn this way, that way. There's no way out of freedom. Sorry. You can't get out of being free. It's absolutely impossible. So this is why in the Great Freedom Teaching we say that all points of view, no matter what they are, whether they're positive, negative, or neutral, those are the source of freedom. And it's only when we realize that they are the source of freedom without trying to make them into anything else, in other words, trying to restructure the house of point of view into a better looking house, only when we realize that all points of view, no matter what they are, positive, negative, and neutral, are entirely free in their own place, are completely liberated upon arising, only then are we able to live this reality of enlightened body, speech, and mind. It can't come about in any other way. No other way whatsoever. We'll only have a taste of total freedom unless we realize this freedom that is the freedom in immediate perception. And let me say a little bit more about that. When we realize the freedom in immediate perception just once, then we realize we're free in all perceptions. And that is so important. It's so very important. It's just absolutely crucial. Many people in this room have had incredible experiences of awakening, but then things have devolved back into point of view in one way or another. And that is only because the freedom seemed to be circumstantially dependent. Do you understand what I mean? That there needed to be a certain set of factors in place in order for that freedom to be the case. So, you know, this happens to many people. This happens to many, many people. It's happened to many, many people I've met over the years. When you have an opening like that, it is critical to come into contact with a teacher who can continue that opening for you. It's just absolutely critical that that take place. Without that, it's very likely that there'll be some kind of inundation of point of view that occurs. Because almost all teachings or books about awakening state that there are certain sets of behaviors that have to be put in place. There are certain thoughts one has to have, certain emotional states, certain egos that need to be gotten rid of or whatever. But you see, there is no repository of points of view like an ego. That would be duality. Then there would be an ego that was over against awareness. Do you understand what I mean? There would be like John Wayne shooting it out with the bad guys. So, you know, there's never been anything like that that's been occurring. And if we think that there's something we have to do other than freedom and immediate perception, we'll spend our whole life doing that. And we'll feel like we're awake or spiritual or religious or whatever, but all we really are is an anomaly of point of view. We're a deviation from the norm of point of view, the conventional norm of point of view, but it's still point of view. Is that clear? It's still point of view. It's still within the matrix. But you know how Neo hooks himself up to the city of machines and all those nodes on his back that kind of look like chakras? He like hooks himself up to that and then he blows out all the fuses on everything. Well, That's what freedom in immediate perception is. That's what it is. He went beyond everything that anyone had told him or anything that anyone else was saying about what was going on. He never believed any of it. You know, he took it all the way. He relied on what he knew was absolutely so. And he took it all the way. So he got to go to the City of Machines and hook up and blow out all the fuses. So, you know, when all the fuses are blown out, that means there's nothing going on. All there is a wholly positive basic space. You know, just like the end of the Matrix where they're sitting there in the little park and the sun is shining, or the scene, whatever it is just, oh, the light is this glorious light, but it's the light that has no source. You know, you don't really see a sun shining in the sky because it's the light that has no source. It illuminates everything. So, you know, the reality of what we are is that when we look into the true nature of our own reality and our own decisive experience in an insightful, incisive, and sublime way, we very directly find out who we are. And let me give you an example of that right now. From point of view, one of the things we learn is that we have a personal identity, right? We have a personal identity. There's Ravi, there's Petra, there's Gisela, there's Simon, Adrian, you know, everyone has their personal identity. And then we learn that we get to know more about this identity. In other words, we get to grow this identity, like we'd grow a garden or a tree, by accumulating all of these memories about who we are. In other words, we accumulate all of our points of view that we've ever had, and that's who we are. So this is what a personal identity is from point of view. Sounds kind of bleak, doesn't it? Well, you know, after most of us live for decades, no matter how successful we've been, we find that we still have a lot of points of view that don't feel very successful. We might have a lot of emotional states, or even just some. We might have a lot of thoughts that don't feel good, emotional states that don't feel good. Our conduct, at least sometimes, isn't the best that it could be. So you see, there's no way to shape this personal identity into a particular form. And why is that? Because it has never existed as anything in and of itself. There is no personal identity. The only identity there is awareness. And that awareness, vast like infinite space, the wholly positive basic space that is entirely aware, includes and contains all points of view. All points of view are its dynamic energy, and all points of view are equal and even in an infinite vastness of pure space. So all of these points of view, as they are the infinite vastness of pure space, are your personal identity. They are your personal identity. There's no awakening or enlightenment that's separate or apart from point of view. There's none. So we're not trying to put all the points of view over here, hide them out of the way, and have our pure awareness over here. The awakening is in the perception, whatever it is. Like Buddha said, emptiness is form and form is emptiness. That's what this means. But he didn't mean emptiness as an inert void. He meant emptiness as empty of anything other than awareness. So emptiness isn't a hangout like a club, a nightclub. To have some kind of realization of emptiness, while profound, is not the arrival point. To try to keep a state of emptiness is simply an extreme. It's another anomaly of point of view. The natural presence of awareness is empty of anything other than awareness. It's lucidly and naturally present. And it is entirely beneficial to the whole as enlightened qualities and activities. So those are the three things that we can know about every point of view. When we see the true nature of any point of view, we see this as its very essence, emptiness, natural presence that is entirely lucid, and responsiveness. And the more we rest naturally in the immediacy of each perception without seeking anything, the more we realize these three fundamental expressions of every single point of view. And the more we realize these three fundamental expressions as the dynamic energy of awareness in each point of view, the more we realize our own freedom. So see, this is direct experience, our own human direct experience, a simple human matter that is the birthright of everyone. There's no one left out. Anyone can do it, so to speak. We're all aware, we know we're aware. Doesn't matter how smart we are or how low our IQ is, we all know we're aware. It just doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether we've taken ourselves to be a psychiatric diagnosis or taken ourselves to be an alcoholic or drug addict or taken ourselves to be the greatest person on earth or anything else. Whatever we've taken ourselves to be, we're free in the immediate perception of it. So you see, the only qualification for enlightenment is awareness. That's it. And we all have it, right? So we're all qualified. We don't need to twist our body into special postures or do anything in particular. All of these words, no matter what they are, meditation, mantra, prayer, they all mean so many things. But each of these also has an ultimate meaning. And that ultimate meaning is freedom and immediate perception. What meditation is there that is more sublime than that of being entirely free no matter what's going on? Where all activities are equal, doesn't matter what you're doing, doesn't matter who's doing what to you either. You're entirely free, completely free. So what could be more of a meditation than that? That's the integration of meditation with every single point of view. So that is sublime meditation. Mantra. The mantra is a Sanskrit word. It means that which soothes the mind. What could be more soothing to the mind than to realize that every single one of its perceptions is pristine and immaculate, free in its own place, a vivid appearance, yet without any true existence other than awareness? What could be more soothing to the mind than that? Or mudra, do you know what mudras are, all these bodily movements? What could be more of a mudra than as we move through the day, every single action of our body, no matter what it is, waking up in the morning, brushing our teeth, eating our meals, making love, going to work, when it's all money, sex, all these things, you know, that sometimes are said not to be spiritual. When all these things are included, what could be more of a mudra? So you see, the mudras are bodily postures that evoke awareness. Well, you know, every bodily posture is awareness. You know, no matter what we're doing, it is awareness. And when we integrate awareness with all of our perceptions, no matter what they are, and no longer take them to be some kind of devil that's out to get us, or our best friend, or neutral, something we don't care about at all, then more and more we experience an exquisite freedom. So it's important to apply our discernment to all these different words we hear, and know what their true meaning is, so that we can apply them to our own lives. And how about the word prayer? That's another one that many of us from the West learn. That, you know, we pray to some kind of deity that's outside ourselves, and then maybe we'll get something good, but probably not. And that, you know, there's someone somewhere, and that someone has a big book, and they're on one side they're writing down all the bad things we do, on the other side they're writing down all the good things we do, and we happen to know that on the bad side that's where most of our characteristics are chalked up. Because, you know, that this is the nature of point of view, that we don't feel very good about ourselves. You know, this is what the nature of suffering. All that means, the true nature of suffering, is we don't feel good about ourselves. That's what it boils down to. We don't feel complete. So, you know, when we look at prayer, the word prayer means petition. So we petition ourselves to be ourselves in every perception. What could be a more beautiful prayer than that, when every single perception, no matter what it is, becomes a prayer? No matter what it is. Yesterday, Carrie and I had a conversation about romance. And you know, romance, this is something we all think about. The nature of being human is to love and be loved. That's basic. You know, basic for every single one of us, to love and be loved. But what happens when we take that all the way? You know, if loving and being loved means hooking up with another person, and we're going to find our completeness in that, what we've really done is consign ourselves to the pit of hell. We all know that's true, so that might be why we're giggling nervously or laughing uproariously, because we know it. You know, we've all tried it, right? And there's nothing there, just like there's nothing in any other point of view. But there is the great romance, and there is the great love that's already present. You know, when we fall in love, we love the way that feels, because we're feeling what we really are. It's like being in this room. Everything falls away. Nothing else is important. And all we are is pure awareness, but most of the time we don't even know what to call that, because we've never heard about it from anyone. So, you know, when that happens, then we blame it on the other person. I say, oh, I'm in love with Adrian. I'm totally in love with Adrian. Wow, I'm just, he does it for me. And so I blame it on Adrian. Adrian is the reason I'm in love. Well, you know, the moment Adrian does something I don't like, then I'm going to blame Adrian for falling out of love. So you see, if I don't see that my own awareness is the root of all these perceptions, if when I fall in love I don't realize that awareness is the root of that perception, my own awareness, and that I'm realizing something about myself, and that I'm always free like that in every single perception, not just my perception of Adrian, then I'm going to be consigning myself to the pit of hell. You know, there will be nothing about that relationship that can ever be perfect enough for me to feel fantastic. It can't happen. However, if when that explosion of love occurs, I realize that's who I am, that's just who I am, that every perception I have, if it's Adrian or any other perception, it's my perfect lover. It's the source of all love is my own perception. I'm the root of everything. I'm the root of all love that has ever been. Then everyone gets to feel just like I do. You know, I'm totally in love all the time. I remember the first time I fell in love when I was a little girl. Gosh, you know, it felt fantastic and it scared me to death. Both of those things. And, you know, to me, to realize who I am and have always been, in that I realize that this feeling of being in love, so to speak, it's just the natural state. So now, you know, I feel that way all the time. But there's nothing I need to make me feel that way. Also, there's nothing that can take it away from me. So, you know, like I sometimes say, I could be married to anyone. I could be married to anyone. And I am. It doesn't matter. I could be married to anyone. Doesn't mean I will be, but I could be. So you see, we, you know, like I was talking to Wangdor Rinpoche once, who is a friend of mine, and he's one of four living Tibetan lamas, high lamas, and he's an old man now. So he was, we were sitting up in his room where he was staying, and we were talking and all that, and he was showing me these different healing blessings and whatever of Tibetan Buddhism and the little deity cards they pass out and that sort of thing. So he went through this elaborate ritual of a health and well-being blessing. And so he did all that, you know, and he had his vajra and he was ringing his bells and he's all dressed up in his Tibetan outfit and he lives in a cave, you know, over in Salpema and is meditating most of the time for the complete enlightenment of all beings. So he goes through his whole elaborate Tibetan ritual for health and well-being, and then he stopped everything and he looked at me and he said, and still use a condom. And then he burst out laughing. So, you know, this is the reality of everything, right? This is the reality of everything. We can't adopt an extreme about it. When we're free in the immediacy of each perception, we're free in all perceptions. So just like I could be married to everyone, and I am married to everyone, it doesn't mean I would be. So this is, you know, the laser-like quality of enlightened body, speech, and mind that is already present. It's nowhere to get to. It's already accomplished, already present. What happens as we wake up is that we just grow more and more familiar with who we really are. In the same way that we grew familiar with who we aren't, we grow familiar with who we are. And it isn't some ordeal. It is not an ordeal. It really is an ordeal. Lots of people come to the Great Freedom Teaching thinking it is an ordeal. But very quickly people find it isn't an ordeal. That, you know, it's just through our own awareness that we look into the true nature of all our points of view. And then we realize who we are. So this matter of personal identity, you know, when we look into that, we might say to ourselves, okay, I've been told I have a personal identity. That's not really an idea I came up with myself. I learned that from someone else. I wasn't born with that idea. When I was born, I really didn't have any idea about being anybody. All of us know that. We had no idea of being anybody for years after we were born. So we look at things in a simple, discerning way. Okay, if there is a personal identity, what is the beginning, middle, and end of that personal identity? Where is it? Where is it located? Where is the beginning of the personal identity? Where does that occur? Does it occur when I'm born? When I come from my mother's womb? Does it occur sometime when I'm living in there, in the womb, in that comfortable little habitat? Does it occur at the moment of conception? So we look into all these things. When can we really say that this personal identity occurred? And say we arrive at, well, you know, maybe it was that moment of conception that it occurred. Well, when we arrive at that conclusion, we have to know, too, that we learn that from others. That's not something we came up with on our own. This is something we learned from other people. So then the insightful question, the next question to ask is, who's aware of the moment of conception? Who's aware of that instant? It's awareness that's aware. Awareness is the root of every experience, every experience, every experience, birth, life, death, all experience. Awareness is the root of it. So then, you know, we've established definitively that the birth of a personal identity is awareness only. So what can we say then about the duration of a life and the cessation of a life called death. Now we're going to look at the middle and the end. So then we look at the accumulation of characteristics with fearful consequences that are imagined, that are related to this non-person that was non-born. So you see, all these are imaginings of awareness. First of all, that there is a personal identity. Secondly, that it has all these imagined characteristics, most of them leading to fearful consequences. So we then look at all these characteristics of being human, no matter what they are. What makes somebody a personal identity? Where for the duration of this life is there an I that's located somewhere? Is the I located, this personal identity, located in the brain? Is it located in the heart? Is it located in every single cell of the body? Is it some kind of a composite of all these things? Well, you know, if that were the case, then we could find it somewhere in there. But we can never find it anywhere in there, no matter where we look. So all we can really say about it is that the awareness is the root of every one of the characteristics of a personal identity. We can look into all the characteristics, no matter what they are. We can take our brain, our arms, our legs, our hearts, our toes, our toenails, and everything else about ourselves and look into it to try to find something about us that gives us a personal identity. But we'll never find anything. We won't find personal identity in the skin or the hair or the eyes or the ears or the nose or the tongue or the heart or anywhere. The bones, the skeletal structure, the blood coursing through our veins, nor will we find it in a composite of those. If we found it in a composite of those, then we'd be able to take the whole body, throw it under a huge electron microscope and see all its subatomic particles, and then everyone who looked at that would say, yeah, that's George. You know, if a personal identity were really, if we could really identify a personal identity, we'd find George. Everyone would see George when they looked at all those things. Or if we reconstituted all those subatomic particles, there wouldn't be George either. And what if we looked at each one of the subatomic particles? What would be there? Awareness, awareness, awareness. I know I'm being repetitive, but do you get what I'm saying? So, you know, then when it comes to the matter of the death of this personal identity, what occurs? Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. So this is how, you see, when we're free in the immediacy of each perception, we're free in the perception of death as well. Birth, life, and death, all our appearances, all included and contained within awareness, all the dynamic energy of awareness and nothing else. All of these points of view about a personal identity are just the luster of awareness and nothing else. So you see, it's very important for us to really look into this, to not just accept it as some kind of philosophy, but to directly experience that we are awareness only, and to directly experience we are awareness only, not by looking at our points of view in a superficial way and arriving at some kind of philosophical or intellectual conclusion about that, but really looking at them just like we did now with the matter of personal identity. But you see, this not only applies to personal identity as a point of view, but to all points of view, because personal identity isn't like the mainframe computer of points of view. That's not what can, personal identity as there is none, is not what contains all points of view. It's awareness that contains all the points of view. All points of view, no matter what they are included and contained within the pure view of awareness as the dynamic energy of awareness itself. There's never been anything other than that, and there never will be. So the point of view of a personal identity is equal to all other points of view. Baseball, wireless transmitter tower, tree, ganga, whatever it is, just another point of view. Our true identity is awareness. We can never prove anything else. So why don't we go with what we can prove about ourselves? In each perception, to rest naturally in the immediacy of what is absolutely true about us, no matter what we've learned about ourselves. When we just simply relax, no matter what point of view arises, when we relax, rest naturally for short moments, many times, totally uncontrived. We're not trying to extend a prolonged period of natural rest. We rest in an uncontrived way in each perception, realizing our own vivid wakefulness as awareness, as the essence of that perception. So when the perception comes up, maybe we've named it anger, or we've named it gotta make some money, or you know, whatever it is. It comes up and we rest naturally. We see it as this appearance that's labeled something, but we also rest simply as its awareness, the awareness that is the root of that vivid appearance. Vivid wakefulness in immediate perception, and in that we realize definitively and conclusively that that perception is awareness only. We sink totally into our enlightened body, speech, and mind, and from that, we have all kinds of options available to us, all kinds of options that wouldn't be available if we just went off into a blow up of anger, or if we went off into worry and concern about where the money's coming from. We'll see things that we never knew existed or could possibly exist in our lives. But as long as we think our money's coming from somewhere else, that everything else is in awareness, but money's somewhere else and we have to get it, then we can't come to a definitive conclusion about this regarding money or anything else. So each of these points of view, no matter what they are, they're a treasury of vivid wakefulness. They're nothing but the throne of vivid wakefulness, every single point of view, no matter what it is. So there's nothing we have to be afraid of or shy away from or even indulge in. All of our points of view are absolutely equal in being free in their own place. Are there any questions?
Yes, at the beginning you mentioned the motivation needs to be correct. And if that motivation is not to seek anything,
The proper motivation, and I always call this the secret key to complete enlightenment, is the dedication and devotion of one's own seeking enlightenment or quest for enlightenment for the benefit of all beings. So first, the enlightenment of all beings, the proper motivation is to want to be enlightened or desire to be enlightened for the benefit of the complete enlightenment of all beings. Now, a lot of times this is talked about in other ways, and I want to be very clear on how distinct what I'm talking about as the proper motivation is from some other things that are talked about as proper motivation. If proper motivation is thought of as lessening suffering, you can see how that's distinct from complete enlightenment. Lessening suffering can apply to all kinds of things that occur within the realm of point of view, like feeding people or shutting down nuclear plants or whatever it is. When the motivation, and then we can get lost in all those good works. But you see, that's just the adoption of an extreme. It's still just a deviation of a conventional way of dealing with points of view. Or the motivation might be something else. It might just be so that some beings can be enlightened. But you see, the complete enlightenment of all beings is very distinct from that, because first of all, we're acknowledging that all beings, no matter who they are, just imagine the entire globe covered with all of the 6 or 7 billion people who are living on it. Just visualize that in your mind. And everyone on that globe is already awake. They're already awake. Whether they know it or not, they're already awake. So there's nothing to get. All beings are already awake. And then we take it a step further. And my awakening, my own enlightenment, I dedicate to all those beings. Just as I awaken, all those beings can awaken. And I will dedicate and devote myself to that through my own enlightenment. Through my own enlightenment, I prove not only to myself, but to everyone who knows me, that this is true. That complete enlightenment is the reality of everyone. And this is then how everyone on the planet can know that they are awake. As long as it's set off in some kind of refined atmosphere that's cloaked in certain ritual garments and bells and whistles and that kind of thing, it'll be bound by cultural assumptions about what it is. Or assumptions that are confined by gender, or whatever it is. But you see, when we say that all beings, no matter who they are already enlightened, this is proper motivation. There's no one who is not enlightened. Everyone is already enlightened. All epitome teachings say this. And when we rest naturally without seeking anything, that becomes more and more obvious in ourselves and in others. But first, this motivation needs to be in place. And as I said, it's already here. This motivation is already here. It's just that we haven't heard about it from anyone. You know, we haven't heard everyone's already awake, or it's very unlikely that we've heard it. Or if we have heard it, the person we've heard it from can't really tell us how to get there. They say, oh, look at this gold ring. Well, you can't have it because I don't know how to tell you how to get it. But what's more dismal than that? So you see, what's already present, already accomplished, already accessible, is not inaccessible or remote. It doesn't require eons of being a certain somebody in order to get it. It doesn't require anything other than our self-knowing awareness as human beings. So when we just, what we're doing when we say proper motivation, another term for it could be acknowledging what's true about ourselves and other human beings. So if you don't like the sound of proper motivation, I can see where some of you might think, that sounds like too much work. Then just acknowledge that this is already the case about everyone. Oh, you know, everyone's already awake. I can visualize the people all over the planet, no matter who they are, just dissolving into one another, you know, in this vastness of everyone already being awake. I acknowledge that that's what's really true about everyone, no matter what I've thought to be the case before. And in acknowledging that about everyone else, well, who does that include? It includes me. You know, so we're included and contained within that dedication and devotion or acknowledgement of the already accomplished enlightenment of everyone. Then based on that, you see, we have the proper motivation. We have this warmth and bliss of devotion that arises in us. It's already there, but it just may have been covered over by other things. But you see, once we start to acknowledge these truths that cannot be denied, like everyone already is who they are, wow, we suddenly feel ourselves coming alive in a new way. You know, even though we may have never heard about it before like this, we find ourselves coming alive in a new way. Wow, everyone's already enlightened. It's not just the Lama or whoever it is. It's me too, you know, it's everybody. This is the foundation understanding, the foundational understanding. Everyone's already awake. And then resting naturally in a non-contrived way in the immediacy of every perception. So rest naturally for short moments, repeated many times until it becomes automatic. That's it. That's it. You see, with that, then we have the cornerstones. We have the cornerstones of awakening. And then upon that, it's much easier for us to understand that all points of view are included and contained within awareness. That's the opening of realization, that. But you see, in the Great Freedom Teaching, many people stop just there and say, I'm awake. Oh, all points of view are included and contained within my awareness. Wow, that's cool. You know, I feel so free. This is really wonderful. But you know, that's only the beginning of an amazing journey. And unless we are with someone who's already been on that journey for some time, and they can say, oh, you know, there's more. It's wonderful. Don't stop there. Then, you know, this really wonderful world unfolds. I saw Adrian and Kay in the restaurant before our meeting this morning, and Adrian said, you know, that he'd been having this experience of childlike wonder, but then he was chastising himself about having that experience, because he had heard somewhere else, I guess, that all experience is experience and something else like that. So, you know, sometimes some of these things are put out in teachings, but it doesn't mean they're true. And I just said to him, well, everything you learned in Bombay, leave it somewhere else, you know, when you come into this room. Leave it somewhere else, because you see, well, in Buddhism, full awakening is called the complete enjoyment body. Doesn't that sound great? The complete enjoyment body. Well, that's what we already are, the complete enjoyment body. But unless we meet someone who is truly the complete enjoyment body, then, you know, who's going to tell us about that? Who could possibly tell us about that if we don't meet someone like that? So when we meet someone like that, we really want to take advantage of it, because that person, they've been through all these milliseconds of complete wonder that continuously open up, for me, 24 years, over a very long period of time. So they've seen it all. You know, why should we try to do it all ourselves when we meet someone like that? There's no reason to. And that's the purpose of the Great Freedom Teaching. I was illustrating to Kay and Adrian that it's kind of like cracking a safe. Have you ever cracked a safe or seen a movie about it? Or if you have cracked a safe, you can talk about it here. We accept all points of view here. Nobody's going to make you feel bad about anything. So, you know, how the safe cracker, they're listening and they keep turning the dial of the safe and they hear the little clicks, click, 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 and they know just what to listen for. They might have a stethoscope they're using or something like that, so they don't miss a click of the safe. Well, that's what fully evident realization is like. It's like click, 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 click. It's always opening into something even more magnificent than it was in the last millisecond. But you know, when that's occurring for us, what could be more incredible than to share that with other people who are just like us? You know, what could be more incredible? So what we call it in the Great Freedom Teaching is the four comforts, that we rely on the four comforts, which are resting naturally, the teacher, the teaching, and the community, because that allows us to share it with other people just like us who are realizing who they are. And it also provides us the support whenever we need it for integrating any points of view that we may be having questions about. It gives us an opportunity to ask our questions and to have them answered. You know, we've all faced this. We've all faced this, so. Any other questions? Terry?
After I left yesterday, I was trying to practice with resting naturally and having a lot of feeling of awareness and kind of going through my afternoon. And I noticed that when I practice this, it feels, for me, a bit dreamy, like sleepwalking, like being sort of inward yet outward. And somewhere in sort of the later afternoon, I also sort of noticed like fear coming up that I wasn't actually out connecting.
Oh,
I felt sort of this, unlike my personal identity, even though I knew that that was what was sort of pulling me to sort of leave resting.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if over time this becomes more than a natural state of comfort and being caught in, being in the state of point of view-ness,
uh-huh,
without awareness feels less natural.
You just naturally settle more and more into who you are. You absolutely do. And you know, for some people, resting naturally isn't required. You just might come here and you get a sense of that, and then it's that sense that is pervasive. So you don't really need to rest naturally or anything else. So, you know, sometimes just having the motivation, the dedication and devotion to the complete enlightenment of all beings, to the four comforts, the dedication and devotion to that alone is resting naturally. You know, so resting naturally, it already is. It already is. But if it isn't obvious to you, then you can also rest naturally. But, you know, for a while there might be that feeling of resting naturally being one thing and the life you've always had being another thing. But they blend more and more together. They just blend more and more together. We offer three series of teachings in Great Freedom. The first is the 12 Inquiries teaching, which includes satsangs like this, or as we call them in many parts of the world, open meetings. Anyone can come to these meetings, whether they're involved in the three series of the Great Freedom teachings or not. So it's a common ground for everyone who wants to wake up all over the world. Number two, so there's the 12 Inquiries teaching. And that, in the 12 Inquiries teaching, we look incisively into the true nature of points of view. Not only the general philosophy of things like there being no substantial personal identity, but we look into it very definitively in terms of our own individual points of view. So there's no way any longer for any of them to be anything. And that enables us to have more of this blueness of the sky with awareness in our own life. And then the second series of teachings is called The Power of Wisdom, and those are two teachings, the basic space of rest and the way of rest. And these are, you were here at the end of the day yesterday when Shoshana read from one of those teachings. And these are words that come directly out of enlightened mind or speech. So every word in these texts is only about our natural state of rest. It's like a great symphony of rest. And when we hear the words, just more and more, we can feel the aliveness of that in us. You know, whether we're hearing the words in a teaching or whether we're reading them and writing them when we're at home. So that's called the Power of Wisdom series of teachings. And the third series of teachings is called the Principles of Unity and Service. And the Principles of Unity and Service are practical principles whereby we're united with other human beings throughout the globe and can be of service. Very practical. Very, very practical, right? Would anyone who has been involved in the teachings like to describe your own experience? There are some people who are here who are new to the teaching. In other words, they're involved in the 12 inquiries, and others who have been here for years. So who here who is new, in other words, in this 12 inquiries retreat group, would like to speak for the benefit of those who haven't participated in the 12 inquiries? How about you, Michael?
Yeah.
Stand up. You can come up here, Michael. Sure. And when you speak, just talk about what it was like before you came to the Great Freedom Teaching, what's happened since you've been here, and how things are now.
Okay, prior to coming to the teaching, I was devoting all of my life and time and everything to this quest, as I saw it, towards freedom. And looking for my own way, as I think is very common, through seeking out different teachers, being led towards different teachings, perhaps reading books, getting confused in all sorts of different speculations, trying to form my own speculations, getting lost in my own speculations, and doing a lot of meditating. I found that was my way. And really, honestly, truly believe that it was the only way. That was my honest, deepest point of view, that there had to be some unification, and at the deepest, subtlest sense, it occurred in a state of almost trance-like meditation, where this mind would merge into me, if you like. That was my very heartfelt point of view, that what had to occur, and I was really, really going for it. You know, I was putting all my energies into it, and probably, in a way, completely removing myself from the world and relationship, because I thought that's how it had to be. You know, it had to be. The world was an illusion, in a sense. It had to be done away with, because everything had to settle back into who I was. They were pretty strong points of view, and it was. I was pretty almost obsessive about it, I think. Anyway, if I'm being really honest, which I am. And I thought it was obsessive in a good way, though. You know, I thought there was obsessions toward, you know, compulsive activities, addictions, drugs, whatever. But I thought, well, why not direct all that energy towards an obsession that, yeah, was for my own enlightenment. And really, I'd formed 5 years ago the ideal that my enlightenment was for the good of all. I really uphold that. But I'm not sure whether that I formed 5 years ago, this really strong drive to teach and share, was about a point of view, perhaps, of what it would be to live for the enlightenment of all beings. I think maybe I think there's a subtlety between that arising naturally or it being a point of view about what it would be to work for the enlightenment of all beings. So anyway, I arrived here about probably 10 days ago now, after meeting Johan and Kati, quite synchronistically, I think. It was amazing. When I met them, I was just searching around town for a yoga class to do, because I'm a yoga teacher and I wanted to do a bit so that I could show some new stuff to my students when I got home. And it was on dark, and I just happened to be taking down some details at the centre of light, and these two very peaceful, angelic-looking beings walked up and just said, it was just like my heart, if I have a heart, knew instantly, wow, something really magical is happening here. And they just said, come inside. So I went and sat down with them and we chatted, and you know when you just know something's real for you, and it was very real to hear the message that I've heard a million times. Oh, there's this person who says all you have to do is be aware of yourself, and I'd, to be honest, heard that a million times, and it had never done it for me, because I'd never believed that you could do it, that you could be who you are without a lot of effort. And but there was just no question in my mind that I had to come along. So there was two things going on, that I've heard that a million times, but at the same time, there's no question that I have to go to this. So I came. First day I was really speculating and questioning, and Candace just said to me, gave me one of those looks that she gives you, you know? And she said, I'd suggest you just stop speculating and rest in the awareness that you are. So I thought, okay, I can give this a go. And it was quite immediate for me, just within a day, I think. But the next day there was still splatterings of speculating going on. But it was quite immediate. I recognized something that had always been there. It was actually something Candace said about the dream state, that you're always aware in your dreams, and suddenly just something clicked, a light bulb went on, that wow, I realize that I am always aware even in my dreams, that even though I'm dreaming, I'm just, that there's awareness of dreaming. It was very simple, it's so simple. And suddenly I started to feel that in everything, that I've always been aware, no matter where I've been, no matter what I've been doing, I've just been aware. So all these safes started being opened, all these clicks started happening. And it's been remarkable. And the 12 inquiries is really a wonderful process for those that would like to do it. We're only halfway and it's long days, and I was a bit tired yesterday because it was a lot of answers, but really, really getting clear on the reality of how many of how everything that I've taken myself to be is just a point of view. And it's not that it's just a point of view, it's seeing that it's a beautiful point of view, because it's just everything I am. It's not something I have to do anything with other than just see it and live as it. And I wake up every morning and my first thought, to be, if I'm honest, that goes through my head every morning in this last week has been, oh God, I've got to do something now to get this back. And suddenly there's this few moments I'm lying in bed with all these points of view and thoughts that, you know, swirl in your head. And I think, oh, I've got to do something, I've got to rest. You know, it is. It's that first thought that when I went to bed, I felt really vividly awake. And then I wake up and I think, oh, probably it's gone. It's happened every morning. And then as soon as I sort of just realize I don't have to do anything, I feel really awake. I don't know what it is, just feel really awake. Can't describe it. And I had a huge catharsis about 2 days ago, because meditation's been such a passion, and I saw through that point of view. It was like a bubble that popped, and I realized that I could let that one go as well. And for someone who's been a monstrous meditator and just been so obsessed with it, there was just, I just cried and cried and cried for a long time. I wept the other day when I was having lunch. Really, just cried.
Yeah.
Cried my eyes out for for the relief that I didn't have to try anything. It was just this immense relief. It was like my brain just was just bathed in something really nice. I can't think of a good metaphor. So, yeah.
Thank you so much, Michael. It's beautiful. Beautiful. Anyone else like to share? Kathy.
For me, I did the inquiries 3 months ago, and I'm also participating, like being also with the inquiries now. For me also, I was always looking for happiness, where to find happiness, where to find freedom. How can I help all people? I was trying to do this by psychology. So now I came here, found the Great Freedom Teaching, and then everything seemed that I knew I would not work as a psychologist anymore. I knew the freedom is right here, and then everything that was clear, and then it settled down more and more. And I feel also it came more and more that I'm free in every perception, that yeah, that nothing is needed, no psychology is needed, no things outside is needed. And only the last, also the last time I knew now that also point of view Kathy is just a point of view, and all my characteristics is a point of view. Like Kathy point of view is point of view having is a little sleepy point of view. So all that dissolved in the point of view. So there is nothing. It was amazing. So I had to laugh a lot.
Oh God, so funny.
And the new thing is now coming, really. I never thought I would be devoted or something like that word, devotion, and what is the other word? Commitment, yes.
Dedication.
Dedication, devotion, commitment. All that had a strong point of view on these words. All dissolved, I'm free in this all world, dedicated now for that message. Now I know that. It's just like all dedicated to bring that message. And also, like, I love everyone. I say I'm my husband, Jochen, also I love, but I love everyone. It's very nice. So I'm, so wonderful, thank you.
Thank you. We'll just sit quietly for a few minutes before we close.